Well, this hour, as we talk with Jim Andrea about his incredible book, What Really Happens After We Die, we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jim Papandrea, as we talk about his work, What Really Happens After We Die. Great work, by the way, Jim. Just want you to know that.
Thank you.
And what's next on your plate?
Well, I am working on a couple of books. I've always got multiple projects going on, and I'm right in the middle of a semester right now. So grading papers and teaching classes and, just doing my thing.
What do you find young people who are fascinated with the afterlife really want to know?
Well, you know, they have questions about what it's going to be like, which, of course, you know, the details of that we don't really know, but you know, there's some great stuff in our New Testament where Jesus talks about it, and he uses this this story about a wedding banquet. And so what he's saying is that, you know, heaven is like a party. It's like a wedding reception. It's like a big celebration. So I guess we know it won't be boring.
No, not at all, will it? Let's take some calls. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland, to get us started. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
George, glad to be back with you.
Thank you, sir.
Yesterday, before I was partially confused about the afterlife and past life experiences. Today, tonight, I'm totally confused about the afterlife and past life experiences. Past life experiences, when I see a building, a house on TV or whatnot, somehow or another, I think I lived there before. I know what the backyard looks like before I see it. Now, we talk about, I got a question about Elizabeth Taylor, but first, when Constantine got the, he got this sign from God, and then he, for Christianity, then he go, the Roman Emperor, he goes out and kills people that don't capitulate to the Christian faith. That's confusing. Now, the question about Elizabeth Taylor, you're all familiar with her.
Sure.
She was married 9 times, outlived 7 of her husbands. In the afterlife, who is she going to be with? Which husband is she going to be with, or perhaps all of them?
Well, there's 2 questions there, Jim. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, I'll start with Constantine because that's the one that I'm more of an expert on. You know, Constantine is just one of many examples of someone who embraced the Christian faith and then did not act like a good Christian should, as we might think. And, of course, he was the emperor of the Roman Empire in the 4th century, so in the 300s, right? And he did have members of his own family executed, and he did engage in wars where, you know, he killed lots of his enemies. And that is a reality. But there are a lot of things about Constantine that are myths that are out there. People say things that he did or didn't do that aren't really true. And so, I would encourage people to read up on the Emperor Constantine, because he is a very fascinating character. He is responsible for legalizing Christianity in the Roman Empire, but he did not make the Roman Empire officially Christian. A later emperor did that. He didn't really go out specifically to kill non-Christians, but he did go to war against other would-be emperors who were persecuting Christians, and so his enemies, whether they be religious or political, he did definitely go after them with violence, and so he's a mixed bag. But it's like you could point to a lot of people who claim to be Christian and didn't act like it, and I guess that's on them as individuals. But it just sort of highlights that we're all called to behave a certain way and to try and be consistent with our beliefs as much as we can.
And I would guess the spirit of Elizabeth Taylor will be with whatever husband spirit she wants to be, don't you?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because there actually is a parable in the Gospels where Jesus tells a story about, there's a woman who had several husbands, which, and the question is, which one will she be with in the afterlife? And I think he sort of, if I remember right, kind of ducks the question and says, well, you know, you're missing the point here. And so, you know, I don't know who Elizabeth Taylor will be with, but if, you know, if Elizabeth Taylor is in heaven at all, then that's something she ought to be thankful for, and I can't say about the rest.
First-time caller Sue in Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Susan. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Hi.
I really enjoy your program, and I do every night.
Well, thank you.
My question is...
You there?
Yes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
If we come in together, do we go out close together? And also, what happens to people who commit suicide?
Take that one first, Jim.
Suicide. Well, you know, that is a great question, and it's one that's kind of been answered differently over the course of our history. You know, one school of thought is that because suicide is murder, and because the perpetrator is also the victim, the person who commits suicide cannot repent for it and ask for forgiveness while alive. There has been a time in our history when, you know, the church has taught that is an unfortunate situation where that person cannot be saved. I think more recently, though, we're open to the idea of God's mercy for even those who commit suicide. And, you know, I'm not an expert in church law, in the contemporary church or anything, but I would certainly hold out hope, even for the person who commits suicide, that God's mercy could apply to them based on the rest of their lives, and that one act would not be necessarily definitive.
And do souls follow each other if you come into a life together? Do you go out together?
You know, I'm not clear on what the caller means by coming into life together. You mean like twins or something?
Let's go back to her, Sue, and ask that question.
Yes, twins or multiples.
Oh, I see. Well, you know, it's interesting you ask that because, I mean, a lot of people do believe that twins or multiples have a spiritual or a psychic connection. But, of course, experience tells us that even though they may be born within minutes of each other, they generally don't pass away within minutes of each other. So I don't think that our faith teaches necessarily that there's any kind of connection that way. But, you know, what we're talking about here more is the connection between an individual's spirit or soul and that individual's body. And that connection is an important part of the tradition that I'm talking about here, because even though our body and our spirit are separated at death, they're never quite all the way separated, and they maintain this connection until they're reunited, and that is an important part of the teaching of our tradition.
Thomas in La Jolla, California is with us. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you. And Jim, God bless you.
Thank you.
A comment and then a question, a friendly question. And in the New Testament, there is the account of Lazarus. And Lazarus dies, and Jesus is not there. And so not only does Lazarus die, well, his body is decomposing, etc. And
right.
Finally, Jesus arrives and resurrects Lazarus. And I was wondering, in the context, and this is the friendly question, in the context of what you're discussing, how would you connect the dots between the resurrection of Lazarus by Jesus and post-death bodily resurrection that you're talking about? And thank you again for everything you do, Jim.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for calling. Yeah, that is a great question. I'm actually glad you brought that up, because even though we do, in normal everyday speech, we refer to the resurrection of Lazarus, in actuality, though, what that is not a resurrection, but a resuscitation. And so yes, Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, but the thing is, Lazarus was going to die again. I mean, he was raised to live longer in that life, but eventually Lazarus would die again. Resurrection, as we're talking about it, is eternal in the sense that, you know, there's no dying again. The resurrection that happens at the end when our bodies and souls are reunited is permanent and eternal. And so, you know, like when you hear people have near-death experiences and they say that, you know, that they were dead for a few minutes and they come back, there's a lot of books about this or YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
That's a resuscitation. That is not a resurrection because even if someone comes back from the dead, whether it's by the hand of Jesus or by the hand of a surgeon, that person's going to die again. And so that's the difference.
Next up on the wild card line, Brian in Wheeling, Illinois is with us. Hello, Brian.
Hello. Greetings from Wheeling. How are you gentlemen doing this?
Okay,
evening?
Sir. I hope Hello. You are too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was just pondering the question, how does one consider death absolute? Who is one to say that death is certain?
Well, I think, you know, from the perspective that I'm coming from here, which is, as I say, traditional Christianity, I think the point is kind of that death is not absolute, that death is not the final answer or the last word. And, you know, in fact, we just came through a time of celebrating, you know, Halloween, All Saints Day, All Souls Day. And, you know, it may seem weird to take the eve of a day dedicated to the saints and turn it into a party. But, you know, this is a kind of ancient practice of a sort of carnival-like mockery of death, because we do not believe that death has the last word. And our apostle Paul in the New Testament even wrote this in the letter called 1 Corinthians. He said, hey, death, where's your victory now? Because, in fact, resurrection is a reversal of death. And so it's resurrection that's the last word. It's resurrection that is absolute. At least that's what we believe.
All of that is so true indeed. John in Gainesville, California. Take it away, John.
Yes. Thanks, Jim, for turning everything back to the authority of God's word. I think that's what caused so much confusion in this world. We go by the traditions of men nowadays. But my question was, will our bodies sort of be like when it was when Jesus was in the room with the disciples and he told them that a ghost does not have flesh and blood like I do, but yet he was able to appear all of a sudden in the room.
And go through walls and everything. I don't think we have that ability, Jim, do we?
Well, you know, that's one of the things we don't really know. I mean, to your point, when we read in the Bible about Jesus after his resurrection, on the one hand, he can walk through walls, come into a room where the door is locked. On the other hand, he can eat, and he eats food, and he has breakfast with his apostles. And so, you know, this is a bit of a paradox for us, but, you know, for those of our listeners who are Bible readers, you know, go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and this is where Paul talks about this thing we call the resurrection body, or he calls it a spiritual body. And what you have to remember is that in our time, we have this sort of binary view of what is material or corporeal, right? And we sort of think that a body or a thing is either material or immaterial. But the early Christians understood that, you know, there are actually sort of degrees of materiality. And so the resurrection body, it is a body, so it is corporeal, but at the same time, it is spiritual because it's been transformed and made fit for the spiritual realm. So again, I keep going back to this image of the caterpillar becoming the butterfly, right? I mean, if we're caterpillars now and we crawl on the ground, we have no idea what it's like to fly as a butterfly and see things from that vantage point. But there is this paradox, and though we don't know what it will be like, we know it's not an either or. but a both and. It's not either physical or material or spiritual, but somehow it's both and. And we can kind of look to Jesus's resurrection body to think about our own, but then we don't necessarily know that we'll be exactly like that. And so there are a lot more questions than answers at that point.
Let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was just talking about you, Michael.
Yeah, I heard that, George, and I'm so glad to be able to talk to Jim tonight. I have to say this. In the Trump White House, there are a lot of people who claim to be Christians. I don't know whether Peter Navarro claims to be a Christian or not. But in my view, he is doing what any true Christian would do, a Christian preacher, priest, whatever you want to call it. This man put his own career on the line to warn everybody in that White House, they threatened to fire him for it, about Fauci. And he did one-on-ones with Fauci. They got very, very heated. He was very, very uncomplimentary. But here's the point. He just came out with a book 2 days ago in Trump time, and it just so fits in with the Book of Revelation's warning about pandemics without saying whether they're going to be man-made or natural. The Bible doesn't say that. But Peter Navarro is sure, 99.99% sure, that this was a weaponized virus. Now, the Christian is supposed to be the watchman on the wall, and I thank the Patriot Supply that advertises on this show. They're doing a great thing because they're telling people what Jesus warned Christians against. If you don't prepare for hardship, you're going to be condemned. But if you don't prepare for him to take over the world for good ship, you're also going to be condemned to go into outer darkness with the hypocrites. So in Revelation 25, it says, the rest of the dead live not until the 1,000 years should be finished. There is a separation in the afterlife. Those who are faithful, not lazy, get to rule 1,000 years with Christ. The rest don't even live. Don't.
Let's get your take on that when we come right back in a moment, Jim, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're back with Jim Papandrea as we're talking about his work, What Really Happens After We Die. Jim, was there ever a time in your life where you doubted the existence of the afterlife?
No, I can't say that there is. I mean, it always was a part of my life, a part of my upbringing. You know, I've been a part of the Christian faith in one way or another all my life. So I never really had those kind of doubts. I mean, you know, we all have the doubts that pop into our head. What if it's all a lie? You know, but you know, those are pretty easily dismissed. And so, you know, my career has been sort of an exercise in reconfirming, you know, what I intuitively believed or what I believed from my teachers when I was younger.
Well, the last caller was talking a little bit more about reincarnation and souls. And I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, I mean, one caller mentioned past lives, and I think that that is part and parcel of the whole reincarnation thing. And as I said earlier, you know, that is an ancient belief. A lot of people throughout history have believed in reincarnation, past lives, transmigration of souls. It's just simply not compatible with Judeo-Christian faith because of the way we believe the body and soul are connected, and the way we believe the body, the human body, is an essential part of the individual. So you know, you can't shed your body without losing a part of who you are.
Let's go back to the calls now. West of the Rockies, Roberta's with us in Tucson, Arizona. Hello, Roberta.
Hello, George. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Does it make any difference whether we're buried or cremated? And will we receive our glorified bodies upon entering heaven, or will we live in spirit until Christ prepares to return to earth, and will we return with him?
Interesting
questions. Great questions, yeah. I don't think it makes any difference whether a person is buried or cremated. It used to be that the church would kind of frown on cremation because it was seen as perhaps less reverent toward the body, but that doesn't prevent God from resurrection. And in fact, our early Christian philosophers who defended the doctrine of the resurrection body, you can see in their documents that there were other philosophers challenging them with these very same questions, and they answer these questions. They talk about it doesn't matter how much the body has decomposed or been broken down, because the same God who created the human body can put it back together like a mosaic, or we would say like a jigsaw puzzle. So at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what happens to the person's body, because the resurrection is not only sort of reconstituting the body, but healing and making it whole and redeeming it whole. So I would say that as far as your other question, the resurrection, the reuniting of the soul and body, takes place at the end, at what we would consider the final judgment or Jesus' second coming or the end of time, however we want to talk about that, that's when the resurrection happens. So until that time, our loved ones who have gone before us, they are experiencing the spiritual realm now in a state of separation from their bodies, and the resurrection and the reuniting of bodies and souls is in the future.
Let's go to Mike in Denver. Hello, Michael. Welcome.
George, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. And Jim, it is such a privilege to be able to speak with you tonight. Excellent presentation. And first of all, just thank you so much for your work on this. Jim, I had a comment and a question tonight. So, Jim, for the last half century, neuroscience researchers have kind of challenged the idea that the brain's workings can account for consciousness. And, you know, even Alexander, the very well-known neurosurgeon, has actually cited the work of brain scientist Wilder Penfield, who has argued that the brain operation doesn't account for brain memory. And, you know, he's kind of made it clear that you cannot explain the mind and consciousness, you know, based solely on the workings of the brain itself. So, you know, based on your research, I wanted to ask you about what you have uncovered about the significance of if the brain has any connection to the soul, and kind of what the brain's role is in that transition to the afterlife.
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, I'm not that kind of doctor, so I'll just tell you what I think. I think it's important to keep the distinction between the brain and the mind. So the human mind or consciousness is a part of what we call the soul, and it's not limited to, you know, that thing in our head we call our brain. It's more than that, and I remember that there was that, I can't remember the surgeon's name, but there was that neurosurgeon who claimed to have had a near-death experience.
Eben Alexander.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so, you know, part of his point is, you know, you can't account for consciousness after, medical brain death or whatever. And, I think, you know, we're seeing something that happens repeatedly throughout the modern age, which is first science scoffs at something and then later proves it right. And so, you know, I think what we're experiencing here is, you know, earlier modern science might have scoffed at the idea of a soul. And now, you know, the more we are able to do the research, we're finding out, well, there's more to this thing called the mind than the brain. And that's where the soul comes in. So, I mean, I see this as kind of, you know, proving it all right, one little step at a time.
We've got Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Jim, I have a question and kind of a comment. My question would be, if you look at the Transfiguration, what that Peter and a couple of the other disciples experience, you know, given the tradition that some Catholics, you know, consult with saints or Saint Michael the Archangel, you would wonder if the original experience was carried forward, where some of these disciples and apostles of Jesus consulted Moses and Elijah after that experience, not knowing, you know, exactly what happened to many of those disciples and apostles historically, which is also interesting. And my comment is what you said about the people being more intelligent maybe 1,000 years ago. I remember I tried to leap far, go to more advanced reading when I was in the third grade. So I did Confessions of St. Augustine. I did finish that, and I was impressed with his mother's persistent prayers for him for over 20 years. And then I got 400 pages into St. Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologia, and I still think that was the most thickest book I've ever read. And I was saying, these people were actually smarter then than they are now at that time.
Yeah.
I read that.
Yeah, I mean, you've picked out two of the people that I would have named as among the smartest, St. Augustine in the early church and Aquinas in the medieval church. Your question about the Transfiguration is really interesting, because I think in one sense we can look at the Transfiguration as another hint at what our resurrection bodies might be like. We look at the body of Jesus in the Transfiguration. But you make a good point. We can also look at the presence of Moses and Elijah there and think about the way the saints are now, even though they have not been yet reunited with their bodies, because we know their relics are still here on earth. And, I think that there is a lot of evidence in that literature from the time between the Old Testament and the New Testament that point to the fact that this Catholic practice, this Orthodox practice of praying to the saints was already going on within Judaism even before Jesus showed up. And so there is evidence of that. So I think you make a good point.
Thank you, Joe. We've got Walt in Allentown, Pennsylvania now. Walter, go ahead.
George, my book is on the way.
Excellent.
George, with all due respect to James, as I've said, I think that man is a very egotistic and prideful animal. And I think this is where the idea of an afterlife came from. George, we are the only animal that is aware of time, that is aware of a beginning and an ending. We are the only animal that is aware of death. And, George, you might say that we are too proud to die, George.
What makes you think we're an animal, Walter?
Well, George, I think that Bible thumping can be traced all the way back to a gorilla's chest thumping. I think that's where the whole idea of an afterlife ultimately evolved from.
Walter, Jim is our resident skeptic, but your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you, Walter, that self-awareness can easily lead to pride. And as we are self-aware, we can definitely go down this road of self-centeredness. But of course, that is the very definition of original sin, isn't it? So I don't know. I mean, as I think we started with saying, that a lot of this is a matter of faith. And, I gave the example of the resident of the Caribbean trying to convince the resident of Alaska that palm trees exist. I think, the skeptic is perhaps the going the other way, like the lifelong resident of Alaska trying to convince the resident of the Caribbean that palm trees don't exist. We have this experience of palm trees, and it all fits together for us. And it's almost too easy to write it off. But that's about the most I can say.
On the international line, Carl's with us near Toronto, Canada. Hi, Carl. Go ahead.
Hello. God bless. Hebrews 4:12 talks about the dividing of soul and spirit. And it says, you know, the Word of God is living and powerful. So we have a soul and a spirit. It gets a little confusing. The number one commandment, like Jesus said, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. But it says God is spirit. We need to worship him in spirit and truth. The animals don't have a spirit. They have a soul, which is actually your soul. It's like your mind and your intellect. It gets a little confusing. So I wanted to get your what you say about soul and spirit.
All right, yeah, go ahead, Jim.
That's a great question, and you're right. The letter to the Hebrews does make this distinction between the soul and the spirit as two distinct things. There's actually two schools of thought in historic Christianity. One is that the human person has three parts: body, soul, and spirit. And you know, to your point, the caller's point, the soul would be the animal soul, and the spirit would be like the rational soul. There are others who saw the human person as having two parts, a body, and then something that includes both the soul and the spirit. And I do have a little section on that in my book to sort of sort that out for folks. But it turns out it's actually okay to look at it either way, as long as we understand that our spirit is made in the image of God, and that our bodies are not throwaways meant to be discarded.
Absolutely. Time for maybe one more quick call. Bill in Los Angeles. Get you in here, Bill. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Weird coincidence. I met Dan Fuller and worked with him and another professor back in 1976 at Jim's Fuller Seminary locale. And they were both working on a project to historically prove the resurrection of Jesus, which Walt will be glad to hear failed miserably. And I turned into an agnostic at that point. But I'm still an open-minded skeptic, but I just thought I'd throw that in.
All right, very good. Thanks for that. Go ahead, Jim.
That's interesting. I was at Fuller in the 80s, so a little bit after that. But I kind of agree with the idea. You cannot prove the resurrection of Jesus. You can't prove these aspects of faith that ultimately, if you could, then they wouldn't require faith. But I will say this: the very existence of Christianity, and the way that it has permeated the world, and just the sheer number of people who have embraced it, and the way that the early apostles went from, you know, scared sheep running like sheep without a shepherd to bold evangelists, there is no other way to explain all of that. And so if you want proof for the resurrection of Jesus and for the truth of the faith, you know, look at the church. Is the church full of hypocrites? Yeah, but, you know, the hospital is full of sick people. So what are you going to do, you know?
Jim, thanks for being on the program. Good luck with the book. If you need anything else, you get back to us. We're always here for you, my friend. So thank you very much. The name of the book, What Really Happens After We Die. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Ryan Stacey, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasore, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.